What's doing, everybody? Welcome to episode 239 of First Class Fatherhood. I'm happy and honored, as always, to be here with you guys. Thank you for tuning in. I got a terrific guest to bring you guys today. Dr. John Deloney joins me on the podcast today. Dr. John Deloney is part of Dave Ramsey's crew. He's a Dave Ramsey personality. He is the host of the Dr. John Deloney Show. You can find the links to his show and his books. He's a two-time national best-selling author, including the book Building a Non-Anxious Life. You can find the links to his book and his show down in the description below. Listen, guys, if you're a dad like me, you stand a lot to learn from a guy like Dr. John Deloney. Not only is he a first-class father, he has over two decades and two PhDs dealing with marriage and relationships, mental health and wellness, anxiety, depression, loneliness, human connection, strengthening relationships, the whole bit. So there's a lot of great information. I'm going to try to pack as much of it in as I can in the time allotted to me. I'm honored to have Dr. John Deloney on the podcast today. He's going to be here with me in just a few minutes, so please stick around for the interview. And I do want to give a special hello to everyone who's watching this podcast on Rumble. If you can, follow the channel here on Rumble. I'm trying to move the video portion of this podcast over to Rumble. I'm doing it little by little. Eventually, I'm going to have the whole catalog available on First Class Fatherhood. But as for right now, for you guys who may be new to the show, the link down there in the description below will take you right to the First Class Fatherhood website, and you'll have access to the entire archives of the podcast, all 739 current episodes of the show, including all the specials, the Super Bowl specials, the Hall of Fame specials, all them, the Navy SEAL specials, all that stuff is included. I've interviewed everybody here from Tom Brady to Matthew McConaughey, Tony Hawk, Steve Harvey, all of these, a lot of UFC dads, NFL dads, whatever you're into, acting dads, entrepreneur dads, all available in the catalog. I really want to invite you guys, go down there, tap the link, check out the list of dads that I've been honored to have join me here on the podcast. All right, and if you could do me a favor, hit that like button, follow the podcast, and as always, guys, please help me spread the word about today's podcast with every father in your neighborhood or in your contact list, and let them know about the show that is here celebrating fatherhood and family life. You guys know it. Every day is Father's Day right here on the podcast, and here comes my interview straight up with Dr. John Deloney on First Class Fatherhood.
First Class Fatherhood. That is where Alec Lace comes in with his popular podcast.
And one of the most interesting was on a podcast.
Alec Lace interviews high-profile fathers from actors to NFL players with a vision to change the narrative of fatherhood and family life.
Joining me now, First Class Father, Dr. John Deloney. Welcome to First Class Fatherhood.
Thanks for the invite, my brother.
Well, I appreciate having you here. Let's start like this. How many kids do you have? How old are they?
I got an 8-year-old. Human hurricane little girl and a 13-year-old going on 42-year-old young man, little boy. It's awesome.
Yeah, all right. I love that. If you could, Dr. John, please hit my listeners a little bit about your background and what you do.
Born and raised in Houston, Texas. My old man was a homicide detective and a SWAT guy, and my mom was a college professor after years. And man, I've grown up working with people when things have fallen apart. Spent 20 years working in higher education as a dean of students and a professor, and also worked with crisis response with police departments and just sitting with people when the wheels had fallen off and asking, like, what are we going to do now? And then about 5 years ago, I joined this crazy crew over with Dave Ramsey, and I'm still trying to figure out what happened.
Yeah, well, things are falling apart for too many families around the country. We're going to get to that in just a minute here. But then take me back to the beginning of your fatherhood journey, if you could, John. How old were you when you became a dad, and how did that experience change your perspective on life?
Man, that's a great question. I was 33, and it transformed everything. I spent a couple of years in just unmitigated anxiety. I was not prepared for the responsibility I thought I was prepared for. And I think, looking back on it, I was not prepared. I did not understand what love was until I held that kid. And I'd been married for 8 years before that. And then we had 3 miscarriages. The last one almost killed my wife. And we had made some big life shifts because we decided, hey, instead of just having one or 2 kids, let's have a whole bunch of them. This is amazing. And then it didn't work out that way. And so there was an identity shift. And then I learned there's a whole community of people who experience loss and devastation. And then if I'm being super frank, I was going to go visit my doctor, and I didn't. And then my beautiful daughter came along, and so it ended up working out fantastic. And so, and then I spent most of my career working with young people and their families. And, so it's both.
Well, I mean, you wrote the book here, about anxiety, You know, and listen, obviously anxiety is a big part that comes along with parenting. You experienced that yourself. How do the principles apply in the book that you wrote about this? How do those principles apply to new parents out there?
Well, I think the parenting part, like I didn't understand love. I didn't understand responsibility and all that, but I think you figure that out. What I didn't have was a map for what love looked like. And so I just knew this. I knew I was doing it all wrong. I didn't know kids pooped 14 times a day. I thought they went once. And I didn't know how to put the diaper on just exactly as my wife wanted. So what I kept experiencing over and over was, you're not doing this right. But I did know one thing I knew how to do right, and that was work. And so I had my job, and then I took a second job as an adjunct professor, and I took a third job as a consultant. So I'm working and working and working. And what I ended up doing was pulling myself further and further away. I borrowed a bunch of money because dads are supposed to live in this kind of house and drive this kind of car. And I just kept digging holes. And so if I look back on the principles, man, I got real lonely too. I stopped hanging out with my friends. I stopped having a group of men that held me accountable to just doing life with and laughing with and just having a drink with. And so I got real lonely. I got real broke. I got real in debt. I got real all these things. I quit working out as much. And so circling all the way back, man, I think all of these things would have helped me back at starting fatherhood, this idea of choosing reality, this idea of choosing freedom, this idea of and not owe anybody anything, this idea of choosing health and healing, taking care of myself, choosing to get back into church, to believe in something bigger than myself. All these things would have helped me stave off that fatherhood anxiety.
Well, so many, this is one of the reasons too. One of the things I focus on so much here, Dr. John, is the fatherless crisis we have going on in our country. We got so many kids growing up without a father or a father figure in their life. We've removed the Heavenly Father from our society. And I think those two things are really adding up for a real disaster in the country. But part of it is, I mean, one of the pieces of that is that part that dads get that anxiety, overstressed, overwhelmed, and it becomes too much for so many of them. But I think that's just one component. I know you focus on marriage a lot, too. The family court system is corrupted in this country. It's pulled so many good dads away from their kids. So there's a lot of reasons for that. But I think the fatherless epidemic is the number one social issue we got in our country.
I could not agree more, dude. But again, if every day I walked out to, I don't know, like a neighborhood football pickup game, and I walk out there, and as I'm walking, everyone just starts yelling, "You suck! You suck! You're the worst!" And I stepped onto the field, and they said, "Hut, hut," and they threw a ball at me, and I dropped it, or I caught it, and I didn't run the right way, and we lost because of you. Dude, I'm just going to quit playing. I'm not coming back out there. Right. And I think that's what we've done to men. That's what we've done to fathers. And so it's not giving them a pass at all, not even a little bit. But there is a context where we've just beat up on them and beat up on them and beat up on them and beat up on them. You know what, dude? Now that I think about it, Mike Rowe, you know, the great Mike Rowe, the Dirty Jobs.
Oh, yeah.
He was down here during COVID and he said something. It's rare that I get stopped in my tracks anymore. And he said something that just froze me where I was. He said, during COVID, when we told 38 million Americans that your job is essential, you got to keep going, we need you. We also told 300 million other Americans, you know what, dude, we don't need you. Just go home and we'll send checks. And I think there's a generation of men, generation of fathers who've just been told, dude, we don't even need you. Just go to work and deposit your money. And I think one by one, they've just said, oh, I'm out. And is that excuse? No. Should they do that? No. But man, if you're fighting upstream all day, every day, and everywhere you turn, you're the problem. You're the worst. You're awful. You're evil. The court system hates you. If the whole system's against you, I get it. It's not right. It's wrong. It's a dark sin to leave your kids, man. But man, it's a tough landscape out there.
And I believe last year was the highest number of suicides we ever saw in this country. And it's majority are men that are committing suicide. And for a lot of those reasons that you just mentioned, sometimes it just seems like a lot of dads face this where they're stuck in a job that they hate and they're afraid to make a pivot because they have so many people relying on them and they're afraid of failing in that pursuit of something that they're really passionate about. So they'll stick in that job that really sucks or something that doesn't really bring them any joy just because they're afraid to make that move.
I think even beneath the joy, it's the purpose. I remember having a conversation with Jocko once and he's like, man, they used to go to war until the war was over. You didn't just go 4 years and then cycle out. You went till it was done, man. And sometimes, you know, back in the in the Stone Ages, you would go for years before you come back and see your family, right? I don't think we're men are afraid of doing hard things. I think they're afraid of doing purposeless things. And if everybody tells you we don't need you, you're a waste, you're ruining everything. All right, dude, I'll step out. And we got to change that. We have to change that to we need you. You got to be here. You play a critical, crucial role. And not to let men off the hook, there are some new skills y'all got to pick up. It's a new world, man. You got to learn some new things. So let's get after it. Let's do the hard stuff because we need you.
And there are a lot more resources now than ever before, I think, right, Dr. John. You mentioned Jocko. I had Jocko Willink on the podcast here a little while back. And, you know, just the fact that we have access to some of these Navy SEALs and their mindsets and what they teach and what they've learned. I mean, that's so valuable to so many men out here. You know, and mentioning the military dads, when I bring them on, I got that where you said before how I didn't know what love was, or I never understood that military mentality of service before self, right? Putting this before yourself. I never really got that until I had my first kid. And then that started to click about putting somebody before myself. I finally got what that meant. And I only experienced that through father. Now I'm married myself 19 years, the whole bit. We were married, we had the kid. But once I had that son, my first son, then I understood that it'd be something bigger than myself. I'm a part of something that's bigger than what I was, just me alone.
I love that. I used to have some knuckleheaded buddies that they're still my great friends, but man, they love to just get in some barn burners back in the day. And I used to remember thinking like, man, I don't know about this, like this. And then I remember pushing my son. He was brand new in a stroller, and out of nowhere comes a giant dog firing out from behind a neighborhood fence. And it was instantaneous and it was instinctual. And I got between that dog and my son. And I remember when that dog finally took off, I started laughing. I was like, oh man, that's what that is. Like that did not exist in me before that. Cause normally I would have thought, man, I don't know about this dog, I'll just run. Oh no. Like I'm getting between me and that kid. And but I'm getting between danger and that child. And suddenly, yeah, like you mentioned, it just all got real clear.
Yeah, and I know you also, too, you talk a lot about marriage, especially on the John Delaney show. You focus on that a lot. And I know you say you get that question, is marriage worth it? I constantly try to talk to younger men because a lot of people aren't getting married. They're waiting till later in life to get married. We have this. We've been sold this illusion that you could chase all these other things in life and it'll bring you the fulfillment. But the only thing you really truly get it from is from your family, having children, becoming a parent. And that's really what the fulfillment is in life. But so many people are afraid of getting into a marriage. We see the divorce rate is skyrocketed through the country here. They worry about that divorce. They're going to lose everything. And so what is your answer to the young men that ask you, is marriage worth it?
I mean, if you look at the data, the answer is yes. The answer is yes. If you're looking at the questions, am I going to be able to have that car and have this particular, like work this many hours and dress like this? If that's your question, then you're probably not ready to get married. If you are ready to partner up and link arms with somebody indefinitely and say it's you and me versus the world, marriage is an act of rebellion now. It's an act of defiance. I will say the words I do. I'll commit. I will etch in stone a covenant with you, and we're going to take it all on together. What most men don't understand outside of the military is that level of ride or die. And what happens is your body goes, oh, thank God. Because we've been sold this freaking lie, which is the whole purpose of existing is self-actualization. You get to the top of your lighthouse and you'll shine forever. You won't. You'll never get there because you're never going to be fully realized in isolation by yourself. And I have people who are single who reach out to me all the time. I want to get married. When you say that, it hurts my feelings. I get that. I totally get that. That makes perfect sense. And I know that. But the only way you're going to fully be fully you is in the presence of other people, especially somebody who said, I'll do this till the end of time with you. Are you in? And you go, I'm in. Let's ride.
I think the thing that throws most people off, John, is, in my opinion, the change more than anything else. People hate change. And so when you're in the same routine and something is going to change that, like getting married, having a child, those are major changes and they're going to disrupt your entire routine. And I think for some people, you know, there's in such a routine that if you move their food bowl over 5 feet, they'd starve to death. You know what I mean? They're in such this cycle of life that when you to do that and pry themselves away, that's really what I think gets most people is that form of sacrifice and that that change. And I know we talked about the SEALs there too, that one of their things is you got to get comfortable being uncomfortable. And a lot of guys are afraid, I think, to put themselves in that uncomfortable situation because nothing makes you more uncomfortable than being a parent for the first time.
Well, I wrote about it in that book you're talking about. There's a chapter on you got to choose your heart. You want to live by yourself, do life all by yourself. You're going to be freaking miserable. And yep, you're going to have some more money. You're probably going to have some more money and you're probably going to have less drama and you're going to have no purpose and you're going to just spin and spin and spin. Or the other side is you can choose hard. Doing life with one person for all of your life, that's really hard. You got to make that decision every single day of your freaking life. And if you're trying to pick one easy path or one hard path, that doesn't exist. Both paths are hard. So I'm going to pick the path that is most rewarding and that's going to, at the end of the day, provide the most peace, the most good health. One of the great indicators of wealth, of health, is if you marry well. And one of the great, great indicators of pew is marrying bad, right? And so pick well and decide on a daily basis. Even if you pick poorly, decide on a daily basis. Are you in? I'm in. And let's do this until the end of time, man.
I think also, too, that we have the social media has really changed the game because you're constantly looking at people that have this illusion that they're living a much better life than you are. And all you ever see is the good side of everybody. And it's like, you know, that also helps you be like, man, I'm not doing as well as this guy. You measure yourself up to these other people. And again, I think that's another reason. And one of the other things, too, is faith has fallen apart in this country. And I know, I mean, I'm very faith-based. I'm a Catholic. I believe in God. And I think that, you know, for so many people that don't have that in their life, I think they're chasing things and looking for something to replace that. And if they don't have that, they find it in other things that lead them down the wrong path. But I think having a strong foundation in faith is the key to everything, and especially finding something bigger than yourself, because I know I'm a recovering alcoholic and addict, and that is all the main thing is finding that higher power. And for me, that's always been God.
That's awesome. I'll answer both of those things. So the first one about social media, I think that the shift that has happened that we don't think through very often is – I used to wonder, man, I remember that girl I dated in sixth, like it was my girlfriend in sixth grade. We didn't date, but it was my girlfriend. I wonder what happened to her. Well, now I can just reach out and find her and then shoot her a message and then find out, hey, send me your cell phone. And now I'm down a rabbit hole that never existed in human history before 15 years ago. Right. And so I think that is really just, remember that guy I went on a date with in college? I wonder what that guy's doing now. Oh, he's pretty successful. And then boom, now we're off to the races, right? And so I think that's destroying people because they can actually reach out and they think, oh, since I still have these feelings, it's real. It's not. Most of us are living that quiet life of desperation. We've decided we're going to live dead, unadventurous, unexciting lives. We're going to Netflix ourselves to death. And so somebody else that we used to love, that we used to date, or somebody who's beautiful that we see, that's not love. What that is excitement. That's life. And that's a choice to live that every day. Is it going to be fun? Clean up diapers? No, it's not. But you can choose life. Most of us don't. We choose the easy path. And then it comes back to God. Dude, it occurred to me, I'll just say it this way. For all of human history, people walked outside of their tent and they looked up to the sky and said, dear God or dear gods or dear moon or sun, please rain or my family dies. They would walk outside as a tribe and say, dear God or gods or sun or moon, please let these crops grow or we all don't make it. And then about 100 years ago, we started getting this cool thing called indoor plumbing. And now I have a faucet in my house. The water just comes right out. And I can push a button and it just takes my cha-cha away. And I don't even have to see it or smell it or nothing. And now I can hit a little button on my phone and Uber Eats just drops food off my front porch. And as we've solved for all of these things that have plagued humanity through all of human history, dude, we've gotten really arrogant that we are the center of the universe and that we run this all. And what the body knows is you cannot hold up the universe. And so like you, I'm a Christian guy. My family and I, that's our faith tradition. I'm to a point now, I don't care what you believe in, but you have to, on a regular basis, take a knee and submit to something bigger than you. This cosmos does not exist so that you can get the best interest rate in the coolest new car. That's not the point of the cosmos, bro. And so take a knee and submit. There is something bigger than you out there. For me and my family, it's God. For whatever it happens to be for you, great. You have to be in submission to something bigger than you. You got to belong to something more important than you.
Yeah, well said. And just to your point there, too, where everything now is instant gratification, I think that's another problem that people have with these marriages. It's supposed to feel good all the time. And marriage isn't like that. It's, you know, it's a work in progress. It's constantly being able to change and grow and develop and switch gears and adapt on the fly with so many of these things. Because I'm not, you know, we're married 19 years now. I'm not the same person I was 19 years ago.
Thank God, right? Thank
God. And that's a good thing. I'm a completely different person. And so is my wife. And it's that it's learning to be able to change along the way. We don't go to school for this. Like if you're going to study to be a doctor, you go to school for a number of years. You learn all these lessons and stuff. We don't get that with marriage. We get married and that's it. There's no learning lesson. There's no teacher to help you. Same thing with parenting. That, you know, you're in a hospital for 3 days, whatever it is, you C-section, and then they just hand you the baby. You're like, they're like, take care. You know, and you're just kind of like, wow, you didn't go to any training for this. You don't have a degree in this. So it's kind of that part of it is, I think, where it creates a lot of the anxiety as well.
Well, we're all no question about it. We've isolated ourselves. We have no family systems. We've got no team of community. We don't know our neighbors' names. And like you literally get in the car with your newborn and your body knows you're on your own, brother. And your body would be failing you if it let you sleep all night. It knows all of this rests on you. Instead of having an extended group of aunts and uncles and weird cousins and neighbors and people like, no, I got you. You go rest. You go sleep. And your body goes, whew, all right, we can do this. But yeah, dude, there is no manual. I had this weird thing come up every year. My wife and I do a strategic planning retreat. Like, how did it go? We talk about money. We talk about family. We talk about travel, all the stuff. And, this year, it was like a light bulb went off. I'm embarrassed to say so. But if you ask me, what are the two most important things to you? I would say my marriage, my wife, my and quickly underneath that, my two kids, in that order intentionally, and my faith. And then I thought, how many hundreds of thousands of dollars have I spent on my PhD program in counseling or my other PhD program in education? How much money have I spent in books about mental health and about, you know, politics? Holy smokes. I've spent $0, zero effort trying to really dig in and learn about how to be the best husband I can be. The greatest gift I can give my wife and kids in my community is to be a great rock in my home. And I need to learn how to do that. Same with my faith. I need to put some time and effort and finances into learning this stuff. And so it's just a reshift in priorities. Esther Perel says, I love this quote. She says, most adults will have four or five really deep and profound and great loves in their lifetime. And if you work really, really hard, it will be with the same person. And I love that. I love that.
Yeah. I forget who said the quote too. If you want to change the world, go home and love your family. You know,
love it.
All this stuff starts in the home, you know,
that's where all of it
begins. And so let me bring it back then to you as a dad here. Well, what type of a disciplinarian would you say you are as a father? And is that different than the discipline style you grew up with?
I grew up with a Texas SWAT hostage negotiator. So yes, my style is very different. Very, very different. Obviously, I believe in consequences, but I think in accountability. Those are two things that drive everything. Underneath that, the platform that those sit on are responsibility, participation, and relationship. Now, that sounds woo-woo and cheesy and lame, and it's truly not. When your boss comes in and says, hey, you will do this or I'll freaking fire you, and he walks out. And you don't do it right, and he comes in and fires you. You go to the next job, and that boss walks in and goes, if you don't do it, you're either A, fighting for your life, or B, you're going to try to find somewhere else to go. If that boss knows your kids' names, if that boss, y'all grab lunch every once in a while, that boss regularly tells you, hey, here's the cash position of the company, here's where we're headed, here's where I see you heading. Then he comes in and says, hey, dude, I got a hard one for you. You're like, bring it on, brother, all in. So when my son, who's 13, has known since he was 2, this house doesn't work without you. You are a member of this. I'm not going to pay you for making your bed. That's what we do here. I'm not going to pay you for flushing the toilet. I'm not going to pay you for helping take your food over from the table. You're a part of our team. The team doesn't work without you. It will stun you how kids will rise to the occasion because they want to be a part of something bigger than themselves. And they don't want this extrinsic motivators. They don't do everything for a Cheerio and a Skittle. The second thing is when starting in fifth grade, my son and I started going to breakfast every single Tuesday at a local Waffle House. I live out here on some acres outside of Nashville, so it's very rural, and we go to a Waffle House. It's the best restaurant I can find in the area. And I've been investing in him. I don't have the time. I don't usually eat food like that. And we go every single Tuesday, and we have for years. He's going into high school now. It's boring, 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 boring. Hey, Dad, this teacher said something to me the other day, and I didn't like how it felt. Now we're in it. Hey, Dad, I think I have a crush on this girl. Dude, tell me about it, right? And now I can say, hey, the way you talk to your mom is unacceptable. Here's your consequence for that. But more importantly, nobody talks to my wife like that. And I've built a relationship with my son where he knows I am 100% invested in loving him. And he always knows I'm a safe place. And he knows that if I call him out, that it's not because I'm in a pissy mood. The other thing I never, ever do is I don't yell at my kids. Their job isn't to be my friend. Their job isn't to regulate my emotions. They don't have the power to control my emotions because they're kids, right? As a culture, we've all decided, you know what? 9-year-olds can't buy booze or bullets or cigarettes because they're 9. Well, how in the world am I going to tell a 9-year-old, you just made me so mad? Do you realize what a weight that is for a 9-year-old to carry? That they're now responsible for dad's emotional regulation? No, I'm the adult in the house. I'm, as Becky Kennedy calls, sturdy. I'm sturdy. I'm the cement block in this house. I'm not going to get mad. I am going to tell you, here's how we're going to deal with this stuff. And I'm pretty firm with my kids, and I love them like crazy. And you know what else? A good fart joke goes a long way. So it's all of it all at the same time.
Yeah, that's why they put 239 beans in a can of beans. You know why that is?
No.
Because one more would be 240. Yeah, the fart jokes well are done. Still good in this house as well. But yeah, like I said, I have 4 kids. My oldest will be 18 now next month. And so it's like each one of them, though, they need that isolated time with dad. So it's like I do try to do that as best I can, whether that's just, you know, a drive to the store, whatever it can be, wherever you can squeeze in some time, because that isolated time means so much to each one of them. And my discipline style is definitely different with my daughter than it is with my boys. And, my wife, we play off each other with that.
Well, and you just said something super important, and I want every dad to hear this. Your kid, you can tell your kid anything you want. You can lecture them. You can tell them. You can yell at them. You can get mad at them. You can spank them. You can do whatever you want. Your kid is going to learn how to treat women by how you treat the woman at the gas station, by how you tip the waitress who did not give you great service, but you can see that she's sweating and she's overworked and she has no other teammates helping. That's how they're going to learn what respect and dignity looks like. So you can yell and bark and do all, or you can live it. Your kids are going to learn what you think about physical fitness by how often you exercise. They're going to watch. So you could talk all you want, yell and scream till you're blue in the face. Your children will learn by watching you. What does that mean? That means the greatest learning lessons, the greatest laboratory is the drive to go get groceries for mom. There was a season when my son was just being chippy. He was 4th grade, 5th grade. He was just testing his boundaries, dude, just to see him. Every Sunday night, him and I would get in the car and we'd go fill up my wife's car with gas for the week. And I would tell him, this is what men do. Mom's getting ready for the week. We're going to go make sure that she's got gas in her car for the whole week. Now, partly I didn't want to get in the car on Thursday and have it be on E, right? So it's self-serving, but I needed him to come along with me and see this is how you treat somebody. And dude, that chippiness started going away and started going away and started going away because it just elevates the whole thing. But I got to model it and then I got to call it out and say, this is what I'm modeling for you.
Yeah, well said. And one thing, Dr. John, I want to get your take on. I know time is running tight here, but I want to get your comment on this just because, I mean, you have the book, Building a Non-Anxious Life. And one of the components of this, sometimes my wife and I look at this as a blessing and a curse because in-laws become a big part of this anxious life that we're talking about.
Yes, sir.
For my wife, you know, her parents are estranged. They've never been in her life. My parents both passed away before I even met my wife. So we've never had the problem of having in-laws, and we've never had the blessing of having in-laws. But for so many people out there, I mean, you go back to like Ralph Cramden and the Honeymooners, right? With the mother-in-law, they call them the outlaw, you know? So what advice do you have for the parents out there that may be struggling a little bit with that anxiety over the in-laws?
My mom and dad have been married 50 something years, 54 years, I think. Two of the most amazing people that you'll ever meet. And I love them. And I have nothing but the highest respect. and they get zero votes into how I run my life. I'm an adult. When I asked my wife to be my wife and she said yes, and I said yes, we became a family unit and our votes went down to two, mine and hers. And they're the only votes that matter. My kids don't get a vote. I want to know what my son thinks about something. I don't know what my daughter thinks about something. They don't get a vote in the decisions that we make. And I think that allows us to be very open-handed. So when my mom starts saying, well, John, you just need to, I just think inside my, like, she's in her 70s. She can say whatever she wants. She's so lovely and smart, but you don't get a vote. I'm going to do what's best for me and my family. My wife and I are going to do this together. And so that line, you don't get a vote. And when I start finding myself giving a vote to my in-laws are amazing too. I give them a vote, or I start giving my wife, I mean, my mom and dad a vote. I have to stop and check myself and ask, what am I insecure about this decision? Why am I slowly trying to outsource the responsibility of this parenting or this school move or this new house? Why am I trying to outsource that to my parents? I'm in my 40s. I need to grow up. And so you can love somebody, you can highly respect them, and they do not have permission to speak into your life, and all that can be true at the same time.
Yeah.
Wow. It's called a boundary.
Yeah. Great stuff, Dr. John. And obviously you have the book, Building a Non-Anxious Life. You got the John Delaney Show going on. What else are you working on? What's coming up next for you this year here?
I'm working on marriage stuff. I'm really going down a rabbit hole to see if it's still worth it, man. Somebody asked me that at a marriage conference that I was speaking at, and it's haunted me. And so I want to know the finances. I want to know the mental health stuff. But so far what I'm reading is done right. It's the thing that's going to save us all.
Yeah, right on with that. All right, last thing I'm going to hit you with here. I love to ask all the dads I get on the podcast, what type of advice do you have for that brand new dad or for that about to be father who's out there listening?
Sleep's your friend. Here's what it is. Everything in your life just changed. Your marriage is over. Your friendships are over. Your whatever used to be is over. And the beauty is you get to build a brand new marriage, but it's going to be different now. You get to build brand new friendships. You get to build brand new everything. Your world has changed. I kept waiting. I remember my wife got pregnant and I remember saying, oh man, I get my wife back in 9 months. And then after my kid was born, I was like, all right, it's probably gonna be another 9 months. I kept waiting to get this thing that was back. Dude, that thing that we had where we just made out whenever we want to and spent money like crazy, that part of our life is over. It was awesome. But dude, when you log in, you plug in and you build something new, this is awesome too. It's just a different kind of awesome. And so what you had is over. It was great. It was a fun run. Now plan and build something amazing moving forward.
Yeah, well said. I love the message. It's been an honor for me. Dr. John Delaney, you're a first-class father all the way. Thank you so much for giving me a few minutes of your time today on First Class Fatherhood.
Thank you, my brother. Appreciate it.
Alec Lace has interviewed more than 700 dads on his award-winning podcast, First Class Fatherhood. Dads from all walks of life, including Tom Brady, Deion Sanders, Matthew McConaughey, Steve Harvey, Tony Hawk, Eric Trump, and so many more. Find out why First Class Fatherhood has been number one on the iTunes charts. Who these men are as fathers and how they raise their children is far more important than anything they accomplish in their careers. Alec Lace encourages his high-profile guests to share their fatherhood journeys and offer advice to new and soon-to-be dads. Let every father in your contact list know about First Class Fatherhood. Available wherever you get your podcasts. Every day is Father's Day on First Class Fatherhood.